the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board.
Woo!
All right, we're back here for another episode of the Midwest Swing Daily Podcast. Here's Monday's edition. Decided to record at night so we could get a little bit of feedback on tonight's Twins-Rangers game, opening game of a series at Globe Life Park in Arlington. And the Twins have taken a 3-2 win, a three-run double by Brian Dozier in the fifth inning off Martin Perez, providing the Twins with all three of their runs, which was kind of a contentious play, as mentioned by actually one of the followers that chimed in after the game. Carson Schubert said, if Buxton doesn't walk there, the Twins don't win the game, which is probably true. Buxton walked on a board. I believe the ball three was a borderline pitch that had been back and forth. Alfonso Marquez, the home plate umpire, had called a ball at some points in the game and strikes at others. A lot of those calls seemed to favor the Twins, which were a little bit strange, but I do feel comfortable saying that. Anyway, that walk, Buxton had a two-walk game, led to Dozier's bases-clearing double, gave the Twins a 3-2 lead, which held for the final four innings, scoreless for both sides, as Phil Hughes goes six fairly strong innings. I don't want to say he was great, but then Taylor Rogers, Matt Belisle, and Brandon Kinstler pitched the last three innings, do a fine job to patch it together after Hughes gave, again, the Twins six fairly strong innings. Obviously, the first inning, pretty pivotal in the strike him out, throw him out double play with, I believe it was Nomar Mazara at the plate, Shin-Soo Choo thrown out stealing on a full count fastball that looked like it was a little bit low. And obviously Mazara took it for strike three. Choo not ready to slide and actually probably a bit of a delayed steal resulting, it's late here, I'm going to yawn a little bit. Chu taking off with a little bit of a delayed steal was out standing up. So anyway, instead of two on with one out, the inning was over. And that kind of mitigated the early damage. The Rangers did hit some balls fairly hard against Hughes, and to only two strikeouts. In fact, if we meander over to his Brooks baseball page, only one swinging strike came on the cutter all night. So if you look at the game log here, Hughes threw 86 pitches and just one swinging strike, which is, obviously not ideal. Fastball averaged 89.5 on the two-seamer, 89.1 on the four, which is, if we bring back his numbers from the previous three starts, it's a bit down. 90.5 in his first start against Chicago, 89.8 in his second start against Detroit. And then his only start at home, 90.9. So he's kind of gone up and down. This was, although it is worth noting, his first warm weather start. I believe each of his first three starts were at or below 50 degrees, or maybe it was like 52 degrees for the warmest one. It was 76 at game time tonight in Arlington. Obviously, Texas is going to be a much better ballpark weather-wise to pitch at. So didn't help his velocity as much, but that doesn't necessarily mean as much as people might think either, as far as, it is just a one-game sample size, and as it warms up at Target Field, that should coincide with him getting further from surgery and healthier as well. So I don't think he's going to plateau at 89.5 90 miles per hour, but it might be difficult to sustain any sort of success. And again, with that too, it's going to be difficult to do that with two strikeouts per night or one swinging strike and 80-some-odd pitches. So I think Molitor did well to go and get him when he did, even after 86 pitches, 54 strikes, have the bullpen ready. Obviously, the bullpen not totally rested, and they had to go get Nick Teppish. In fact, Buddy Boshier sent back Teppish, added to the 40-man roster, and called up Ryan O'Rourke, put on the 60-day DL. O'Rourke's going to see Dr. Meester, in Arlington sometime on this road trip. In fact, that's the Texas Rangers team doctor. So that is the doctor that Trevor May saw before he had Tommy John surgery. O'Rourke assured me not to, that everything is structurally fine as far as his most recent appointment. So we're not signing any any warnings for Tommy John surgery here, but rather he's just getting another look, and then they can talk to the, you know, the Twins are going to meet with O'Rourke and come up with a plan. Putting him on the 60-day disabled list at this point just means that the Twins think he's at least a month away. Since he's not on a throwing program, that's probably pretty obvious that he's not going to make it back in a month. So, not really that alarming. So, not that much to worry about. Anyway, back to today's offensive performance again. The bat's pretty quiet. The only extra base hit on the night was Dozier's double. Only runs scored were driven in on that double. And Martin Perez basically had the Twins under wraps the rest of the night. The bullpen held the Twins down fairly good. But six walks for the Twins is, again, you know, the number one offense in terms of taking walks. So that's kind of been their MO so far this year, and that has continued. Again, two for Byron Buxton, one for Robbie Grossman, obviously, one for Jorge Polanco, one for Kenny Vargas, and one for Chris Jimenez. So obviously spreading them out a little bit too, which is obviously good. I did want to touch on Jimenez just a minute. He's just looked very solid for a backup catcher. He's not going to hit much, and that's kind of hard to ask a guy like that to hit much. You know, not only based on his pedigree as, you know, not a top end hitter, but also just not playing that often. But I do think that defensively and as far as putting together a game plan and executing it, Jimenez does a really great job. So I do think, and I did tweet this right after the game, that he's like 10 times more competent than Juan Centeno back there. And the funny thing was, actually, Centeno was well-regarded for his defense coming over from, first of all, I believe the Brewers system and also the Mets. In fact, he was, I think, the first catcher to ever throw out Billy Hamilton in the major leagues stealing a base. I think he was regarded as a pretty good catch and throw guy and just completely fell apart for the Twins and now in the Astros system. So anyway, I just want to tip my cap to Chris Jimenez, who kind of does a little bit of everything for a team. Nice 25th man to have, 24th man if you want to count Danny Santana, which a lot of people don't, or they'd like to count him out, which I totally get. I totally understand. And so we'll see how much longer he's on the team for, which is a source of angst for, I know, a lot of Twins fans. Carson Schubert also mentioned Miguel Sano, 0-for-4. Maybe today would have been a good time for his suspension. Well, you don't expect Miguel Sano to go 0-for-4 against a lefty that doesn't strike a lot of people out, doesn't have great command like Perez. So just an off night. Did make that really nice play early in the game. Came back behind third base, peeled around into fair territory. I still have no idea how he caught it. Very difficult play, and in fact, what I did tweet was that I would have found the takes making fun of it as insufferable, because that's a difficult play, and Miguel Sano made it. Also had the presence of mind to get up, fire home, and that throw was an absolute strike out front of the plate, not the mound. So I think he did a great job. I think Sano made a really nice play. It just didn't look all that great. Keep in mind, too, the wind was blowing 16 miles per hour at first pitch, so it's... That's an underrated part of that play that makes it difficult. Now, you know, he's been very impressive defensively. So too has Jorge Polanco at shortstop. I did, in fact, say on Twitter, I might start calling him Lo Natural, which is Spanish for the natural, because literally everything he does at the plate or in the field to me looks natural. He's never rattled, seems to be, you know, be calm, cool, and collected and not look like a 23-year-old on the baseball field. So quickly becoming a fan of Jorge Polanco and everything he does on the baseball field. I think he's looked really good at short. And so it's been a surprise to see the left side of the infield defensively more than hold its own to this point. You know, Dozier's looked, for the most part, decent, and Joe Mauer has saved a few errors from the guys on the left side. But the outfield defense, I think everybody knew, was going to be good. The infield defense was obviously... has been better so far this year. And in fact, actually, the outfield defense did bail out, I thought, Phil Hughes and a couple other pitchers tonight with some long fly balls. So it was a night where everything went the Twins' way, whether it was umpire calls or deep fly balls getting reeled in. But you know what? If you're going to be a decent team or a good team, and obviously within one game of 500, it means the Twins have a chance to at least be decent, you're going to have to steal some games. So I feel fairly confident saying that the Twins stole this one tonight. And so I don't think there's any shame in that whatsoever. Terry Anderson wants to know, with the number one pick looming, if I am taking McKay or Green. Obviously, McKay, the Louisville first baseman slash pitcher, and kind of has gotten some more steam as far as maybe going number one overall. That's Brendan McKay. Left-handed pitcher, can absolutely mash, and I think would be obviously looked at as a pitcher in the professionals, or in the pros. Sorry to lengthen that up for you there. I do think Hunter Green is the number one prospect with a bullet, and I think you have to take the top guy as far as talent. I don't know how much stock to put in this idea that that Hunter Green may be a little difficult or is angling to not be drafted by the Twins, which was strange because I asked him a few months ago how he felt about Target Field, and he told me he loved playing there at the RBI World Series a few years back and would love to make it home for him in the future. And again, he has no incentive to tell me one way or the other, but I don't know. I mean, the number one overall draft pick gets the most money, gets the most chances in pro ball, and so I don't really know what to make of the potential idea that he's throwing some weight around, and I can't prove that he is. You just hear whispers, oh, he might be difficult to deal with as far as signing with the Twins, but I don't see any hiccups coming into play here. The Twins have the number one draft pick with the most slot money, best opportunity. It would strike me as odd if there was any reason to see or say that you wouldn't sign with the Twins. It's just unusual because he seems like a good character guy and wants to be a professional baseball player. So I wouldn't put too much stock into that, and I do think the Twins, they may go McKay, don't get me wrong, but you got to take the guy that you're convinced is going to be the best major leaguer, not the one that gets there quickest. And the stability of the organization, in that Terry Ryan obviously had a job for a lot longer than I think other teams would have kept going to the well with the same guy, that has to help. You know, if you're running a team and you're worried about saving your job in the next 2 or 3 years, if you draft Hunter Green, you worry about not being there for when that player gets it to the big leagues to save your job. I don't think that worry has to be anywhere in the minds of Thad Levine or Derek Falvey, and I don't think it is. But I'm just saying, if there was any consideration for that as to whether to select one or the other, you got to forget about that. Take who's going to be best for the organization. There's a chance that's McKay. So I'm not going to pretend that I don't have, or that I do have answers more than that. You know, you see a lot of people on Twitter saying, if they don't take Hunter Green, I'm going to cancel my season tickets. It's preposterous. There's a reason why we get to see these guys on YouTube and scouts watch them in person, get reports from cross checkers and all that stuff. So I'm trying to not have as much of a cop-out as possible, and I trust Sean Johnson and his comrades, in addition to Falvey and Levine. Obviously, Falvey had a front-row seat to see him pitch a while back, which was obviously a big deal. So we'll see what happens, but I don't think you can go wrong with either of those. Nate Obermiller wants to know about Nick Birdie, who is throwing the living daylights out of the ball for Chattanooga. 0 earned runs through 6 1/3 innings, 8 strikeouts, 3 walks, a sub-1 whip, 11 strikeouts per 9, 4 walks per 9. And I guess I think the question that could be inferred, when will we see him in the big leagues? And there is some room on the 40-man roster with some maneuvering if Nick Tepish doesn't pan out and you take him off the 40. You could add Birdie if you want to go get some firepower, and maybe JT Chagua isn't ready. I do think and or hope that Birdie gets a chance sooner rather than later, just because the bullpen, you know, is obviously talented, but, you know, guys like Ryan Pressly are struggling, and that shortens it significantly, because there was never a plan for Pressly to struggle, and he's been really bad so far. So, you know, hopefully he can turn the corner and kind of help fortify the back end with Brandon Kinsler, who's looked fairly good. But I do think Birdie at some point this year has to make it up and justify the selection. Obviously, a second round pick on a reliever is a dicey proposition, especially now that it's year 4 in the system and he still hasn't reached above double A. And in fact, his numbers at double A prior to this year were not good. They're only three innings in 2016 and then a handful in 2015 as well that were not good. So, yeah, if he keeps rolling, I think you got to, I don't know, he might be the kind of guy you bump to triple A for a little while just to get his feet wet against some guys who've played in the big leagues. But I think it's the kind of guy that you got to get up here sooner rather than later. Josh Meyer wants to know about Nick Gordon potentially debuting this year. And, off to a good start, obviously, at Chattanooga. I'm going to pull up his numbers here. I'm on Nick Birdie's page, so it's not going to be too long. But Nick Gordon threw 14 games, hitting .339, .397 on base, .464 slugging. Already popped a home run, a couple doubles, and a triple. That's any results here tonight notwithstanding. But did have a very solid stint in the Arizona Fall League, showing a little more pop than maybe we're accustomed to, which is it's a good thing. Don't get me wrong. I do have some reports on Gordon defensively that I'll be posting on Cold Omaha, on the zone coverage side of things. So look out for that as well. But yeah, I think you have to be encouraged by what he's shown so far this year. Just looking at raw numbers without rates in front of me, it sure looks like the walk numbers are up this year too as well. Not a ton of patience last year, 87 strikeouts, only 23 walks, and nearly 500 plate appearances. So, as far as if you're not going to have pop, you should probably get on base. You know, it's something he's I think, working on, which is a good sign. Defensively, just to tease kind of the reports that I've seen, he basically makes all the plays you'd expect him to, but he's not really a plus defender at short. I think he's got pretty marginal range, but a decent arm. You know, obviously he looks the part and should probably be able to hang it short, but I don't think he's going to be a stud over there. Has played now 9 games at short and 4 games at second. Again, I think they just want him to settle in at either one of those, because if they do trade Dozier, which I don't know where I really stand on that, but if they were to trade Dozier, you know, it's going to come down to, is Polanco better at short than Gordon or vice versa? And the guy that I talked to, who's actually a big Jorge Polanco fan, said he couldn't say for sure. He thought probably Gordon had the higher ceiling, but also defensively at short, but also that he's been impressed by Polanco at this point, not only in the big leagues, but as a prospect. It was a guy that grew on him, because it was Polanco wasn't expected to be a huge prospect, and he's just kind of defied expectations at every level. So do I think Gordon can debut at some point this season? It seems a little far-fetched, but you know, the polish to his game, whether it's a family member, you know, an inherited trait from his dad and brother being in the big leagues or something, I think that helps him. But I also do think they are going to slow play it with him, because there really is no reason to rush him with second base, third base, and shortstop lockdown, as well as the top utility job for Eduardo Escobar and, you know, Angel Vilma, you know, ahead as far as the next call-up, since he's on the 40-man roster. So I would say it's 20% maybe that Gordon plays in the big leagues this year, maybe even less than that. All right, that's all I got for you today. We do have a very special guest for tomorrow's weekly show. Mike Exisa of CBS Sports is going to be joining the program. He wrote an article recently about the Twins and the subtle changes they made in the offseason to get better, and the difference that the Twins have shown through now 19 games. He wrote it a few days ago, but those changes have not been altered. So he's got some fun perspective on that. We'll ask him about how Aaron Hicks is doing. Obviously, old Hicksie, our old friend, off to a strong start out there. We can ask him about Greg Bird, Aaron Judge, Jordan Montgomery, really exciting pitching prospect that is their number 5th starter, and is reminding some people of Chris Sale, more crazy people than sane people. But we'll ask him some questions about the Yankees as well. So if you've got questions about that, get them into me at Brandon_Warren on Twitter, or at ZoneCoverageMN, or Midwest Swing Pod. Thanks for joining us, and check us out tomorrow. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.